Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
I tend to think of the golf swing as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position, not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
The championship is being contested in Northern Ireland. I don't want to get into the differences, but close enough for a lot of people and a lot of his fans to have made the trip and to watch him there. Shane Lowry, 32 years old, his best finishes in majors. He's got a couple of decent ones. At the Masters, he's never done much. He tied for 39th back in 2016, which was his best year in major championships, because that was the same year he tied for second at the U.S. Open. He tied for eighth at the PGA Championship just this year, if his name sounds a little familiar to you. And at the British, his best finish has been a tie for ninth back in 2014. So, Shane Lowry, he's got one win on the PGA Tour. He's won four times on the European Tour. He is tied atop the leaderboard with American J.B. Holmes. Now, J.B. Holmes is one of these guys that we hear about a lot. We see him near the tops of leaderboards a lot. He has won five times on the PGA Tour, which is an accomplishment in and of itself. He has yet to win a major championship. So, again, we have the real possibility of seeing somebody win their first major championship. And as much as I like J.B. Holmes' game, and as much as I think he's a cool story, and I'm going to tell you a bit about his story as we go on here this morning, he feels like one of these guys, were he to hang on and win this British Open, could very well be the only major championship that he wins. I mean, it's not an insult. It's a fact that there are many, many players who win a major, and that's it. I mean, Sergio Garcia appears to be one of these guys. Hell, he looked like he would never win a major. He won his Masters, and I don't know that Sergio's going to win another one. Gary Woodland, who just won the U.S. Open, I don't know that he's going to win another major, and there are plenty of people who feel the same way. J.B. Holmes has a very interesting story in terms of how he came to play the game and what has happened to him as he has kind of gone along here. He's from Kentucky. If you want to know anything about this guy, who is going to be teeing off later this morning with a share of the lead at the British Open after 36 Holmes, J.B. Holmes, he has molded his game toward and I guess with an eye on what guys started doing in the early 2000s, which is just absolutely pounding the ever-loving hell out of the ball off the tee and see what happens after that. I mean, you could say, some say that John Daly started this in the quote-unquote modern golf. I think that's a bit of a miscalculation and does John Daly's game a bit of injustice, because John Daly had an amazing touch around the greens. Still does. Great hands, okay? So, but he really does get after it. And his driving distance, at one point he was at 312.7 yards. Think about that. He averaged 312, almost 313 off the tee. And is just unbelievably long off the tee and just decides, yeah, wherever it ends up, I'll be that much closer to the green. It's not the way a lot of us were brought up to play the game, but if you can hit the ball that far, there is definite value in being able to get it that much closer. As a matter of fact, later on in the show today, we're going to go back and listen to the driving tips given to us by Stephen Daly at the Cape Club of Sharon. And we talk about that very thing. It's nice to keep it in the fairway, but as long as it's in bounds, being closer to the green has a lot of value, even if you're in the rough, because if you're that strong to hit it that far off the tee, chances are you're that strong to hit it out of the rough wherever you do hit it, and you're going to be that much closer to the hole. So the thing with J.B. Holmes is that back in 2011, he was dealing with vertigo. You remember that Jason Day dealt with a similar thing, playing at the U.S. Open and a couple of other tournaments, and decided, you know, he needed to go checked out. He was diagnosed with the structural defects in his brain. He went and had brain surgery back in 2011, and then a month after his brain surgery, they found out he was allergic to something in the, I guess, the plate that they put at the base of his skull. There was an adhesive used on the titanium plate at the base of his skull. He had to be airlifted from his home to Johns Hopkins for another surgery. And then, you know, this is in September of 2011, goes back on the PGA Tour 2012, January of 2012 at the Farmers Insurance Open. That's pretty cool. I mean, it's a nice little story, and it's a pretty cool comeback story from having brain surgery in September of 2011 and getting back on tour in January of 2012. Most recently, you may remember, about a year and a half ago, he was at that same tournament at the Farmers Insurance Open where he came back and started his comeback after brain surgery. He stood over his second shot on the 18th hole in the final round, and he needed to make an eagle to get into a playoff. He eventually ended up laying up with his shot, but he took over 4 minutes to decide what shot to hit. And people went after him on Twitter. And I don't mean just people. I mean fellow touring pros, like, mocking him and criticized by... It's rare that these guys will go after each other in any place other than, you know, a practice round or in the locker room. They you know, like most athletes, and I loathe to use the word athletes when talking about golfers, but let's just say there are some golfers who are in fact athletes. How about players? Most players in other sports tend to keep this stuff in-house. They don't do a lot of their talking over social media. Other golfers went after him and said, what are you doing taking 4 minutes to decide what shot to hit, and then you lay up anyway? And it didn't even matter because he didn't end up winning. You know, you could say something if it led to a victory, but it didn't. So... It's crazy that happened. Justin Thomas was one of the guys who defended him, said he would have done the exact same thing. Anyway, this is J.B. Holmes, and this is the guy who has a share of the lead, and he is the, you know, I'll say the lone American there at the top of the leaderboard. Now, there are a few players a few strokes back. We'll get to them in a moment. So it's Shane Lowry and J.B. Holmes. They're at 8-under par at the British Open. One stroke behind them, Tommy Fleetwood, who I like to win this thing, Lee Westwood, and then at 6-under par, Justin Rose, Cameron Smith, Justin Harding. And then we have the group of Americans knotted up at 5-under and 4-under par. Andrew Putnam, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, nice little group of players, only 3 strokes back, Matt Kuchar and Patrick Reed. Remember Patrick? Yeah, Patrick, we hadn't done a whole lot since he won the Masters. He is 4 strokes off the lead after 36 holes, along with Tony Finau, another American, Xander Schauffele, Ricky Fowler, Webb Simpson, Dustin Johnson, all the American players who are 5 strokes off the lead at 3-under par. Some other good players in there, Henrik Stenson, John Rahm, 4 and 5 strokes off the lead. So they're not quite as bunched up as we've seen in other tournaments where you see a bunch of guys just at you know, 2 strokes off or 1 stroke off the lead. Put it this way, I have to like either Holmes or Lowry just based on their position after 36 holes. But the fact is there's so many guys within 5 strokes of the lead, it's still anybody's tournament. And the way Tommy Fleetwood has been playing and the way he's playing in this tournament at just 7-under par, he would be the guy that I would probably, if I had to bet money on a guy coming out on top after 2 more rounds of play, he would be the guy. All right, so those are the guys who are in it right now. Those are the guys who have a real shot at winning this thing. And it could be some Cinderella story. It could be someone else coming from 6-7 strokes back. I mean, this is moving day, and we're going to see a bunch of moves up and down the leaderboard. Not so much happening so far this morning. Jim Furyk, of all people, had a nice round going early on. I believe he was 2-under on his round when I first checked much earlier this morning. But I believe he is back to 1-under par now. So, no, he is just kind of treading water back there. He's 7 strokes off the lead. So those are the guys who are in it. What about the guys who didn't make the cut? We're going to talk about them next. Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, probably the biggest absences, the most notable absences. Tiger, just because a lot of people want to see him play. Rory, so many people, myself included, thought he would have a real shot at winning this thing. Hugely disappointing first round for Rory. We'll hear what both Tiger and Rory had to say about missing the cut when we continue here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
All right, disappointing for a lot of people as they're watching the British Open this morning, and really as you got the sense that this was going to be happening here toward the end of the second round yesterday, a couple of big names were not going to be in the mix at the Open Championship, which, by the way, I will not call it. I can't do it. It's the British Open. I know they want us to call it the Open Championship, and I understand it's the first. I was explaining it to somebody yesterday. It reminds me of how people feel about the University of Nevada, Reno, because in Nevada, everyone knows UNLV. And when I lived in Las Vegas, if people were going to school in Nevada, they would get pissed off if they either went there or they were going there and you referred to it as the University of Nevada, Reno. No, they were the first University of Nevada. You just say you're going to Nevada. You're just going to the University of Nevada. You do not need to differentiate what was the first, right? And that's how they feel about the British Open. No, we were the first Open Championship. Therefore, we get to refer to ourselves just as the Open Championship. Everyone else has to differentiate by calling themselves either the U.S. Open or the Australian Open or the Canadian Open. We will continue to refer to ourselves just as the Open Championship. Anyway, it's the British Open, and Shane Lowry, J.B. Holmes are alone atop the leaderboard, which means, wait a second, where's Rory McIlroy? It's, you know, practically on his home course. Rory McIlroy set the course record at this place when he was 16 years old. He's got to be the favorite here, right? Yeah, he was for a lot of people. Missed the cut. Rory McIlroy, not playing this weekend. Unbelievably disappointing opening round from Rory McIlroy. First, let's hear what McIlroy said after he officially missed the cut yesterday.
Disappointed not to be here for the weekend. Unbelievably proud of how I handled myself today, coming back after what was a very challenging day yesterday. And just full of gratitude towards every single one of the people that followed me to the very end and was willing me on. You know, as much as I, you know, came here at the start of the week saying I wanted to do it for me, you know, by the end of the round there today, I was doing it just as much for them as I was for me. I wanted to be here for the weekend. Selfishly, I wanted to feel that support for two more days. But, you know, today was probably one of the most fun rounds of golf I've ever played. Yeah, it's strange saying that, being standing here and, you know, having, you know, had a bit of success and, you know, won this championship before and just to be battling to make the cut. But to play in front of those crowds today and to feel that momentum and you know, really dig in. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one to get over. Yeah, I'll probably rue the finish yesterday, that, you know, dropping five shots in the last three holes. But I felt like I gave a good account of myself today, and, you know, I can leave here with my head held high.
All right, so there's Rory McIlroy, who once again, it is worth noting, set a course record at the very course where they're playing the British this year. He shot a 61 there when he was 16 years old. He grew up not far from there, and not playing this weekend. He mentioned the end of his first round there. He was making a run and he was making a charge. He needed a birdie on 18 to make the cut on the number, but he pulled his second shot left of the green, and he couldn't get up and down. So that's it. Or he couldn't hole out the wedge shot is what he needed to do. I like Rory McIlroy. I think he is a phenomenal player and he's fun to watch, but he's got issues with pressure. I mean, he's talking about having the most fun he could have out there because there's no pressure on you when you're Rory McIlroy and you go out there and in the first round, where in a tournament where a lot of people are expecting you to win, you're the favorite, you put up a snowman on the first hole. You make an eight and then you bogey three. I mean, the eight is enough. Wow, that. I didn't even mean to make that awful joke. Making an eight on the first hole is enough to undo most people's, if not their round, if not their tournament, at least their round. But then he cards a double bogey on 16 and then makes a triple on 18 and shot a 79 in the first round. He puked all over himself. So for him to come out in the second round, after being some 14 shots off the lead after round one, of course he's going to have fun because there's zero pressure. What does he do in the second round? Makes birdies at 3, 7, 10, 11, 12. His one bogey of the day came on 13 on a par 3, which we got to talk more about this course. This course looks unbelievable. I had no desire to ever go play golf in Northern Ireland. When I think about playing golf over that part of the world, there's a couple few courses that I think most of us want to play. You want to play the old course at St. Andrews. There are a couple of courses in Ireland along the Wild Irish Way that I would love to play. I would love to play Ballyliffin and a couple other places, but I want to go play this golf course now. I would love to. And I'd shoot 150, but I don't care. It looks great. So I don't think it's a big deal that Rory or anyone else makes a four on some of these par threes. But that's the only bogey he made yesterday. Again, birdies on 3, 7, 10, 11, 12, 14, 16. And then when he needs one more birdie to make the cut on the number and the pressure is back on, he makes a par in 18, and he is making the short drive home for the weekend. Love you, Rory. Classic pressure choke. As for Tiger Woods, Tiger did not instill a lot of confidence when talking about his game and how he thought he was going to do at the British Open leading up to it. He hadn't played a lot. He hadn't played all that well. It certainly showed in the first round when he made a string of bogeys and doubles inside of six holes. He went bogey, double, bogey, par, bogey, bogey. Holes 5 through 10 of his opening round pretty much undid him. One birdie in round one, but a couple other bogeys, and that was a 78 for Tiger in round one. And then yesterday was a little bit better. He began his second round with a birdie and made another one, made a two on the par 3 sixth. But three bogeys throughout the rest of the round, a couple more birdies. It was a 70. You know, he saved a little bit of face, but Tiger Woods also missed the cut. Here's what he had to say after missing the cut.
Kind of grinded my way around our golf course today. I had a chance to get it back to, even par for the tournament. I didn't handle the par fives well. I was in perfect position, all three of them. And if I handled those par fives well, I would have been right there. It's more frustrating than anything else because this is a major championship, and I love playing in these events, and I love the atmosphere. I love the stress of playing a major. And unfortunately, I've only had a chance to win one of them and was able to do it, but the other three I didn't do very well. No, I just have to continue to do what I'm doing. You know, I've gotten so much stronger over the past year, you know, working with my physios and trying to get my body organized so that I can play, you know, at a high level. And, you know, it panned out. I won a major championship this year. So it's just a matter of being consistent. That's one of the hardest things to accept as, you know, as an older athlete, is that you're not going to be as consistent as you were at 23. You know, that if things are different, and I'm going to have my hot weeks. I'm going to be there in contention with the chance to win, and I will win tournaments. But there are times when I'm just not going to be there. And that wasn't the case, you know, 20 some odd years ago. You know, I was, had a different body, and was able to be a little bit more consistent.
Tiger, yes, did win a major this year, but you also missed the cut in two other majors. So, look, I thought Tiger had a chance this weekend just based on the fact, like he said, he did win a major championship this year. He won the Masters. His game has not left him. We know that it's there, but for all the talk about Tiger being back, I don't know how else you establish yourself being back in most people's eyes. Well, actually, I do, and here's how you do it. You have to be dominant again. And I made up my mind a long time ago that we were never going to see that type of dominant Tiger again. I don't know that we will see another player as dominant as Tiger again in the foreseeable future, the way he dominated in the early 2000s and for a long stretch there was something that was a generational dominance of the PGA Tour. It doesn't mean he can't win. Of course, we saw that at the Masters. And I would love nothing more than to see him just win two more tournaments, surpass Sam Snead, put himself back into the conversation as the greatest player to ever play the game, which you need some more of those tangible results. You're not going to catch Jack in his 18 major championships. Tiger's sitting at 15. I don't think he will. But a couple more just regular tour wins and get up to 83, 84 wins, go past Slammin' Sammy and be able to say, you know what, he didn't win as many majors as Jack, but he won more tournaments, you know, by quite a few. And no one ever won more than Tiger Woods did throughout his career, and that'll put him back in the conversation. As far as major championships go, I think he's another guy out there. And he is a guy who can win. We know that. He is a guy who can win a major championship, but the dominance factor, if we needed a better illustration of that, well, I don't know that we've got one, a better one than we have this year. Tiger Woods, a guy who can still win majors, but a guy who's not going to dominate. That's where we're at right now with Tiger and his game. As far as this golf course goes, Royal Port Rush, the conditions out there, as tough as they are, it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it looks good on the TV. and some of the oddities about the golf course I think are cool. I know players, Brendan Steele among them, who is not at the British this week, but he's been on this show before. He said he doesn't think, you know, out of bounds should exist within the confines of a golf course. You know, out of bounds should be reserved for, you know, like you're literally out of bounds. You're in someone's backyard. You are in the ocean. You are out of bounds. On the very first hole at Royal Port Rush, out of bounds on both the left and right side of the fairway, where there is apparently lots more room to play golf on either side if you miss that, the left side of the fairway specifically, by more than, I think, 10 paces, you're out of bounds. There are white stakes in the rough on both sides of the first fairway at Royal Port Rush. It goes back to the way the course was originally designed and the fact that they at first did not own that those particular parcels of land. So they had to create out of bounds in those areas. The members still play it that way. So they decided, yep, we're going to make the best players in the world play it that way when they come here to play the British Open. I like it. I think it's different. You don't see it all that often. And every once in a while on the courses you and I play around here, there has to be out of bounds in certain areas for, either property purposes or wetlands or whatever it is. But it is odd to see it on a championship layout, especially during a major championship. So we started off talking about one of the leaders, J.B. Holmes, and his distance off the tee. He really is unbelievable. I think he's always been a guy who hits the golf ball a long way. When he grew up in Kentucky, he played varsity golf as a third grader. He was good enough as a third grader to make the varsity golf team at Taylor County High School in Campbellsville, Kentucky, where he grew up. And you don't do that as a third grader unless you can hit the ball a long way. So how do you hit the ball a long way off the tee? Aha, I have your answer, courtesy of Stephen Daly, the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. He's going to give us driving tips coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's time for our tip of the week here on the Sports Hub Golf Club. And for that, we go with Stephen Daly, who is the head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon. Stephen, we're going to be talking about my favorite subject today, and that is driving the golf ball. Because is there anything more fun than stepping onto the tee, driver in hand, and having a good feeling about how you're going to hit the ball?
Nothing. It's the most important thing. You know, it gets you started on the hole, and, nothing better than just getting up and hitting it as far as you can.
It does. It does wonders for your whole attitude toward the hole. Now, I mean, we've all fell victim to the great drive followed up with laying the sod over an 8-iron when you've only left yourself, well, for me, like 140 in. But, you know, for everyone else who just wants to get the ball in play and hit a decent drive, what do you have for us tip-wise in terms of just hitting good, consistent, and hopefully long tee shots with the driver?
You know, you said it there with the consistency. You know, being consistent is going to be the most important thing. So centerness of contact is going to be important. So as rudimentary as it sounds, the tee height that you put the ball on the peg is going to be very important, as well as maybe a little bit wider stance with a big swing. It's going to be easier to be off balance if you have a narrow stance. So I'd widen that stance a little bit. And then, some of the results from Dr. Brody's science is that hitting the ball as far as you can is the most important thing. So I'd say just swing away.
I'm glad you brought that up, because all the, you know, in this age of metrics and everything else, the whole drive for show, putt for dough, actually driving the ball a long way, even if you don't keep it in the fairway, statistically shows the closer you get to the hole with that first shot, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, you look at Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, you know, Ricky Fowler, all the best players in the world. They're not too interested with hitting the fairway as much as they are with how far that ball's going. So I would just, you know, swing away. Obviously, there is some parameters as to how far off the fairway you want to be, but hitting it as far as you can is going to be the most important thing.
I would think that has a lot to do with the fact that if you've got the strength to hit the ball a long way and you've got the mechanics to do that, you probably can utilize those same mechanics to muscle the ball out of the rough if you don't find the short grass with the tee shot.
Certainly. Yeah, exactly. You know, a wedge from 120 yards in the rough is going to be a better shot than, you know, a 5-iron from 180 in the fairway. So at least for my game anyways.
Or even for not taking it to that extreme, 120 out and you got a wedge in your hand as opposed to 140 out, and now you've, you know, moved maybe to an 8-iron. You're bringing in the extra distance, and you're bringing in an extra, you know, a little bit more length on the club. And for most people, they're going to be more comfortable, you know, standing there with that wedge as opposed to anything longer, and increasing the number of ways it can go wrong with the further out you go.
Absolutely. You know, science shows the flatter the face, the more off-center hits you're going to have, and the more offline those shots will go. So the more that you can get a club with more loft, the better off you're going to be.
So in this also, Stephen Daly here, by the way, head professional here at the Cape Club in Sharon, with the oversized drivers now, and they've kind of maxed out on size and club face and all that, but is it still as important to find the center of the club face, not just for the height of the ball, for where it's launching off of, but actually getting as close to that sweet spot? We've been told that, like, the sweet spot has gotten bigger. Is that true, or do you need to? Should we all still be trying to find that exact center of the club face with our drivers?
Hey, listen, I'm still trying to find the center of the club face, but you know, centerness of contact is where the majority of that distance is coming from. Also, with the speed of the swing. But, you know, obviously more off-center hits are going to be bad for your game. So as many times you can hit the center of the club, the better. But, you know, I wouldn't leave the driver in the bag either.
Okay, so widening up the stance would be the number one thing. Is that to promote the best trajectory to hit up on that ball, like we're told we're supposed to with the driver? Does that also help with finding the center of the club face? What does widening the stance do for us?
Yeah, both of those things, but also better balance throughout the swing. So you talked about the consistency. Being able to strike the ball consistently is going to be dependent on the balance of the swing too. So a little bit wider base is going to allow you to, you know, keep that balance and deliver the club the way you should.
Sounds like widening the stance. I mean, we could boil it down to that. So how wide? Shoulder width, a little beyond shoulder width?
Me personally, I like to go a little bit wider than the shoulders.
Me too, but I have very narrow shoulders.
But, you know, enough to where it doesn't restrict the movement of your hips and the rest of your body. So certainly there are times where you can go too wide, but, you know, maybe just outside the shoulders would be my preference.
Okay, widen that stance. It's going to help you with consistency in terms of finding the center of the club face, the correct angle to hit that ball, hit it a long way. And as Stephen Daly, the head professional here at the Cape Club in Sharon, says, long is good. Even if it's in the rough, it's going to increase your chances for making a good score on that hole.
That's it.
All right, Stephen, I appreciate the time here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for more of the Sports Hub. Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back now in the Sports Hub Golf Club. Final major championship of the season. This is it, the British Open. Again, it seems a little odd to be sitting here in the middle of July talking about the last meaningful golf being played. That is, if you're not a fan of the FedEx Cup, which has also been shortened. This is all part of the PGA Tour's revamped schedule that started this year in 2019. Now, I know the British Open has nothing to do with the PGA Tour necessarily, but we are used to having the PGA Championship in August. No, remember, they already played that. They played that back in May. So this is it, last major championship of the year, and then the FedEx Cup, shortened from 4 events to 3 events. That'll begin in August. Everything will wrap up before Labor Day weekend, which, by the way, in case you're planning on heading down to Norton again this year for the Deutsche Bank, or as it became the Dell Technologies Championship, another quick reminder, that's not happening either. There will be championship golf back in the Boston area next year, the Northern Trust. But this year, the Northern Trust is being played at a different site, they're going to try this alternating venue for the Northern Trust, at least for these first couple of years. So enjoy it this weekend. The British is now live on NBC. Started off the first couple of days on the Golf Channel, as it was much earlier this morning. Switched over to NBC, where you'll be able to peek in on it from now until 3 o'clock this afternoon. So if you're trying to avoid the heat, you'll have golf on NBC up until 3 o'clock today. One other notable guy who missed the cut yesterday, who didn't have much to say at all, Phil Mickelson. He was out of there. Phil went on his big fast leading up to the Open, drinking nothing but water and a special coffee, and he said it didn't have anything to do with it. He just said he's not playing very good golf right now, and he got the hell out of there after his two rounds. So not much from Phil Mickelson after missing the cut, along with Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, all players who missed the cut at this British Open. And one other story that we didn't get to, apparently there was a dust-up between two players on the course after one of the players hit one of the other players' caddy's mother. This happened on Friday. Robert McIntyre, who is a Euro Tour rookie, got all up in Kyle Stanley's face because Kyle Stanley didn't yell four after he hit a bad tee shot on 17, and it ended up hitting McIntyre's caddy's mother, who was in the gallery. The ball also hit Stanley also hit a Marshall with another tee shot on the 14th hole. So McIntyre said, "We're shouting as it's coming into the crowd," and Kyle Stanley is just standing watching it. People don't have enough time to react after we shout, and it hits my caddy's mom. So I told him how it was. I guess both McIntyre and Andrew Johnston were trying to shout as the ball was coming down, but it was too late. Nobody has a better idea of where a ball is going than the guy who hits it. So, yes, it is on Kyle Stanley to yell four and to let people know it's coming down. But McIntyre, as quoted in The Scotsman, said, "There were harsh words. It wasn't too pleasant. But you've got to tell him it's not right. He didn't take it well at all." McIntyre ended up making the cut, and Kyle Stanley, even for hitting the Marshall on 14, then hitting this guy's mother on 17, shot a 67. He's four under. It's good for him. So, good luck to these guys. Hopefully they won't be paired together again over the weekend. All right, Tim McCone, Mike Flynn, standing by. Those guys ready? And take over here this morning? I imagine they are. Oh, I hear somebody. It's got to be McCone.
Hardy, I heard the Open isn't the only place that there were harsh words this week. The Who's Your Caddy Classic with you and Maz. Did it get a little heated there on Monday?
Yeah, who said that?
I don't know. I've heard it through the grapevine.
Did Maz say something?
I don't know. It's just, yeah.
Okay, listen. Here's the problem with Maz, is that he used to be a good golfer. And I showed up with the expectation, and by the way, I got the ringer for our group, right? I secured the guy who was going to put us in great position off the tee nearly every single hole, right? The guy's name is Tony Malazzi. I've been his buddy of mine for years, been playing golf with him for a long time. We used to work with his sister, Carolyn. The guy's a great, great, I've played with a lot of good players in a lot of different levels of golf. No one is as consistently long off the tee as Tony. The first hole we play, we were group 1A, right? So we go on to the first hole out up there at Atkinson, and I think it's a 313-yard par 4. Tony put his tee shot to the back and left of the green, right? So you figure 313 in the middle, he hit his opening tee shot about 320. Like, legit long, 50 yards longer than most guys can ever hit the ball, okay? Maz shows up with his F-minus game, and he's supposed to be like Steady Eddie. Maz shot a 74 last year up at the Links at Outlook. Maz has some game. Not on Monday he didn't. And then to top it all off, he screws everybody up. It's a scramble, right? So, you know, somebody makes the first putt, and you see how it rolls, and Maz is saying stuff like, I don't think it really breaks that way. Like, what are you talking about? It just broke that way. Or he would ask me, it's like, Hardy, what do you think this is going to do? I'm like, it looks like it, you know, moves a little left at the end. Now I think it goes right. I'm like, well, what are you asking me for? And he was doing this all day. We started bickering on the first hole, and it really didn't end for the 5+ hours we were out there, as most scrambles take. So, no, it was not pleasant. Is that what you wanted, McCollum?
No, I'm just glad to see there's no resentment left at all. Yeah, that you guys have clearly moved past that.
We could have put up some kind of a number. We're not going to win it, right? But to go out there in a scramble with a guy like that, just an absolute horse off the tee, you should be able to, with a couple of decent players, right? Not bad. We're not terrible, right? We should be able to go out there and post 8-9 under, right? Instead, as a scramble team, 4 under par. That should have been our best ball score. Between the four of us, Big Jim was playing with us too. Between the four of us, we should be able to put up a 4 under, just everybody playing their own ball and taking the best score. As a scramble to put up 4 under, it's unacceptable.
And waste the opportunity. Yeah.
I blame Maz. I don't know what happened to his game. He's having issues with this game right now. All right, what do you and Flynn have today?
Got a bunch of stuff. We're going to do a lot of Celtics because we've got B-Rob in studio as well, and then we'll do some NFL stuff as you get ready for the Patriots coming up to kick off camp this week as well.
Nice. All right, well, I will be listening. Everybody enjoy. Tim McCone, Mike Flynn, coming up next. And thank you to Stephen Daly, head professional at the Cape Club of Sharon, for giving us the driving tip today. Enjoy watching the British Open the rest of the weekend, and we'll do it again. Another Sports Hub Golf Club next Saturday morning at 7 right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.